This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Happy Monday. Happy Sports Monday. You're listening to The Bounce Show. Into April we go. Deep, deep into April. So much sport over the weekend. What a cool weekend, hey? Mostly because we've got an SA champion again on the USPGA Tour. It's been, I can't remember the last time we actually been able to wake up on a Monday. And one of the SA boys has won. Brandon Grace, I think it's the 11th career title now. He's had seven titles on the European Tour. His first on US soil now. It really is such a massive, massive thing for this. He was seventh at the RG. The RBC Heritage. 9 under, an amazing golf, amazing score, and a golf course that certainly does suit his game. On the coast, you've got to be accurate. You've got to keep the ball nice and low. You've got to shape it a bit. Oh, that made my weekend, I've got to say. There was also lots of rugby. There was also lots of football. So much rugby, in fact, that today we are going to be theming the show a bit more rugby slanted than usual. We've got two guests. We've got one of my favorite sort of up-and-coming blogs. I hope they don't get offended by me calling them up-and-coming, but a blog that I kind of discovered end of last year called The Left Backs. Really, really cool. Two talented guys. They're focused on anything from cricket, rugby, football, as you can take by the left backs. There's a football skew in there somewhere. Anyway, we're going to be talking to Sean from The Left Backs, talking about Super Rugby, all things around that, because there's lots to talk about. And we've got a new coach. So we're going to be chatting to Sabu Njikiliso. If I can just get hold of him, I'm pretty sure he's going to come through. And those are my two superb guests for today, because we've got lots to talk about. Last week was the press conference where it was revealed that Alistair Goodseer was the new coach. Hoorah, who would have thought it? Well, everyone, basically. Good song, this, huh? Mark Ronson, Daffodils. Anyway, like I was saying, so rugby's going to be a big deal today. And then I've got some football rants. Nothing gets the blood pumping quite like football. So I've got like your usual selection of, well, Arsenal are crap, and here you are, our fans telling you that. But also there's Stan Collymore takes a real big go at Aston Villa. And Jolyon Lescott, one of the more effeminate names in professional sport, he kind of does take the ire of Stan Collymore. So I'll play that later on in the show. But first, let's just kick things off now with, well, let's get this guy in. His name is Heavy D. No, he doesn't have any boys with him. He's just Heavy D.
Arsenal fan TV, Heavy D. How disappointing was that? I mean, it's like we've been watching that game after game at home here this season.
Guys, season's over, man. It's over. Do you know what I mean? It hurts me to say, season's over, man. The dream's over. And the worst thing about it is, we might never get top four. And you know what? If City and Liverpool win in Europe, we're fucked. We're fucked because only two teams go through to Europe. So even like fourth place might be in vain. Mm. This has turned to a nightmare.
And even though we know that, you know, we're not going to win the league, even going into it before this, but before the game, Leicester have dropped points. Arsenal just looked so lackluster out there and they weren't really... Yeah.
They don't want it, man. They don't want it. They're just like, they're not interested, are they? They're not interested. Do you know what I mean? Like, boom! I'm not in a boom mood today. I'm not in a boom mood. I'm boomless. But yeah, man, what is wrong with them? What is wrong with you, Arsenal players? What's wrong with you? Don't you want it?
We're bottlers.
They don't want it like us. We want it. We want this, right? We win this league. We want trophies. They don't want it. What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? What does Wenger want? What does the players want? What do they want? They want to sit back and just, you know what I mean? We're just embarrassing. You're making a mockery of us, man. I brought our tune for you. We're all behind the team no matter what, and this is what we get in return, man. Come on. Fix up, man. It's embarrassing. Don't like this shit, man. Do you know what I mean?
What do you think needs to change, though?
You know, we have to have a clear up, man. Clear out. You know what? They're not playing for the manager. The manager's got to go, man. I'll turn myself. This is it, man. So we ain't won nothing. Leicester and Tottenham. Come on. It's embarrassing. Enough's enough, man. Come on, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, what can we do? It's just broken. It's broken, mate. It's broken. I'm sorry. The system is broken. You've got to bring in some new, blood, bring some new players, bring in some new manager, whatever. You've got to fix it, man. Whatever's doing right now is not working. Do you know what I mean? It's just got, you know, it's not happening. So that's what I've got to do. But you know what? If I want to say one thing, like, Mac from the Tottenham and he gave me this.
This guy's absolute gold. He's just like this big burly dude with peroxided hair. He's about 20 years too old for the hairstyle. But look at him go, Heavy D and the rest. Everyone's just having a full go at Arsenal right now. And wow. It's just getting worse and worse, isn't it? Anyway, let's get into the headlines for the weekend. It was an action-packed weekend, as I said at the top of the show. Not because I was running out of words. It really was just an action-packed weekend. It's so nice that there's such variety on at the moment. And rugby, well, let's start with that. Now, we'll get into a big, big rugby chat, of course, as I mentioned, with our two guests. But just to run you through the fixtures, well, sorry, the results from the weekend. The Crusaders are looking like a pretty good side right now. Like, I know everyone's beaten the Jaguars. I think they've been very disappointing. Anyway, so 32-15, the Crusaders triumphed over the Argentines. But this Crusaders team, it's not like anyone ever wrote them off, okay? Like, that doesn't happen. But the thing is, they lost the Chiefs early on, and then they've kind of got under the radar ever since because the Chiefs have been so amazing. But here's a team that's going to look so bloody good, I think, come the end of the tournament. And there's clearly some new talent that is coming through that's replacing the old. So good on them. The Rebels, well, UK is ready. The Rebels, fourth, they all fall into the same bracket for me. They're never going to make the playoffs, and they just kind of, every now and again, they throw a banana skin to bigger teams. The bigger team this weekend that did not do any sort of skidding was the Hurricanes. There's another team, New Zealand team, that started off kind of slowly, but look at them power on now and looking to be a huge force. Big win there because that was away from home for the Hurricanes. The Cheetahs versus the Sunwolves. Now, this is something that I'll pick up on with Joanne in a bit. But wow, when these two teams played in the first time this tournament, okay, in Singapore, 1 point was the difference. It was such a close match. Literally just 1 point separated the two teams. But now, 92-17. Now, when the Kings were in Super Rugby a few years back for, I think, the last time they were here in Super Rugby, I really thought this is it. This was a team that's going to take 100 points. There's no way they can compete. There's no way that they're going to be able to maintain an entire season. Anyway, because rugby the way it is in this tournament, if you're up 60 points, you're not going to keep hammering away. You're going to rest your key players. There's no chance you can ever get to 100. But the Cheetahs almost bloody well did it. Look at that, had 92-17. Tries are plenty for all those sort of backs. I think Sergio Peterson scored four. Another hat trick in the team somewhere along the line. Just absolute drubbing. And you got to ask, like, if the Sunwolves are taking that to the Cheetahs, then what are the chances of them competing against someone like the Chiefs at home in rampant form? Again, I don't think they're going to see a score as high as this because they literally just lose the shape completely, and they will learn from this. But the fact is, there's a 90-pointer in this tournament, and that doesn't mean much good for the tournament itself. The Blues versus the Sharks. The Sharks had a very spirited opening, and they could easily win this game if they took opportunities. But 23-18, the Blues just too strong in the end, and that tour is only going to get tougher for the Sharks. So, Sharks fans, my sympathies are with you in advance. Waratahs 20, Brumbies 26. Now, the Waratahs are kind of falling behind the Rebels as far as, well, top two of the Aussie teams. So, as the third best in the log right now, this is a massive game for them, and they did bloody well to get so close. But the Brumbies just too good. 26-20, the way winners there. And speaking of Aussie teams, another one took an absolute hammering. Bulls 41, Reds 22. Really good for the Bulls. They are a good side. I think if you watch them versus the Sharks, it was a game that nobody needed to watch or actually didn't need to happen, actually. It was so horrible. It was a terrible indictment of where SA Rugby is. But thankfully, they have bounced back, and they're looking like a good side. They can run the ball, play with a bit of intent, and yeah, look, there's always going to be good young talent to the Bulls. It's how it's nurtured amongst and sown in between the senior players. That's always their big worry. 41-22 is a good score, though, but the game that I most enjoyed of the weekend was Lions versus the Stormers. Kind of always felt the Stormers were going to be a bit short in this one. Am I just talking about the altitude? The Lions are a good side, they really are. And they showed it against the Sharks. They were very clinical, and they didn't fall for the bully tactics. They would just play their own game, keep the ball in hand. They're always the more attractive side, and hey presto, another big win against a big local rival. So when you think about it, they are very much SA's best team right now. And log points pretty close to the Stormers, but come playoff times, I think I'd rather have this team going through than any other team. They can mix it up with the best of them, but they've always got the ability to score. They've got great hands, great interplay, and they just have an attack mind that you can coach all day. But thing is, never forget that this team has been together for about 3-4 years, right? When they got relegated from Super Rugby, they had the chance to build together. Sure, a couple of players were missing here and there, or they went and played. Like in the case of Elton Junchies, he went and played for the Stormers for a year. Worst year of his life, right? He's a rugby player, but he was away. Anyway, the Lions have had a chance to really kind of knuckle down and create a core, and that is why they're the best team in SA right now. And they had a chance to just grow, and with Johan Nakum, and they've all grown together as a unit. So it's no surprise to me that they are top right now, and they have beaten Sharks and Stormers back-to-back times. So that's Super Rugby. We'll look at it more in depth in our interview feature, but get on to the Sevens quickly. The Kenyan Sevens team, good on you. 30-7 winners over Fiji is a really amazing result, that, because what it only does it say is that Kenya, definitely, they always have been a force here and there to be reckoned with. They've fallen off the ball a little bit of late, but the fact that they can win this thing just shows that going into the Olympics, we've got a real contender here, which means we've got a lot of contenders. When you think Fiji, obviously, they're top of the standings right now. Then it's SA, good side. And SA hasn't clicked of late ever since we won the SA leg of the tournament. Of the World Series, but here's a team that can win, and they've got such good players. They've actually been quite hard done by. Like that semi-final against Fiji was just a beautiful game of rugby. So they're a contender, and then you've got Australia, you've got New Zealand, and to lesser stages, you've got guys like sort of Kenya, maybe England have been nothing great of late. France have shown that they also want to play, but I think that's just a once-off. Yeah, so Sevens, huh? Going to this year, I was so excited about this, and it just hasn't disappointed whatsoever. Right, next up, we've got football. Lots and lots of football to get through. Like I said, towards the end of the show, I'm going to play you a clip about how Aston Villa is just kind of throwing the towel in, but like people are really upset. And you think the guys in Arsenal Fan TV are upset about Arsenal and the fact that they can't win a league? Well, other side of the spectrum, Aston Villa have confirmed they are relegated. They lost 1-0 to Man United over the weekend. That's what they've done. They even wore yellow, which was kind of fitting and kind of horribly ironic at the same time. Other than relegation news, of a slightly more positive aspect is that Rafa Benitez has finally got something out of the Newcastle team. 3-0, they beat Swansea, which is like the floodgates finally opening for them. They've been coming so close. They've been trying so hard because they're in the drop zone right now. They're second last. They need to get a good win, a win run going on here just to be safe. That is, you know, provided other teams didn't do the same. So that's good news for them. Other results, Chelsea, well, their season is just, yeah, it's just so done. I mean, the motivation of those players has been all-time low. Man City went to Stamford Bridge and they won 3-0. Bournemouth, they lost to Liverpool 2-1. Liverpool was a nice, great late-season form, which hopefully they can take into the Europa League. And then Arsenal 1-1 Crystal Palace, which is why that guy like Heavy D at the start of the show was so angry. Tonight's a big one though, because Spurs take on Stoke, right? Now this is a big one because currently Spurs sit eight points behind Leicester. Leicester with an entertaining, although controversial, 2-2 draw with West Ham over the weekend. So Spurs win this one, then it's 5 points because they've all got a game in hand. It really is an exciting kind of end to this whole thing. And yeah, next few weeks, we'll be getting more and more interviews and more content around that for you. Absolute Premiership, well, it's a two-horse race, and it's suddenly become a much bigger one for Sundowns. They're now 6 clear with 5 to play. They had a good win over the weekend at beating Joma Cosmos 2-0. But they couldn't get the winner against Free State Stars. Huge amounts of opportunity there. They just couldn't tie it away. But then La Liga is the story that I'm finding quite interesting at the moment. I don't know if you picked it up like a month or so ago. I was just getting so frustrated that every team I supported just did terribly, like just so badly. So to prove my point and how I'm a sporting jinx, I said that I was going to support Barcelona for the rest of the season. The moment I did that, their 39-match unbeaten streak, done, finished. They have now lost 4 of their last 5 matches, 3 of which have been in the league, okay? A league they were absolutely dominating. They now are tied with Atletico, so that's top of the log, and Real Madrid's only 1 point behind, just 1 point behind. Real had a big win over the weekend, 5-1 over Getafe, Atletico 3-0 over Granada, but Barcelona 1, Valencia 2. I touched on the golf, good win for Brennan Grace. Formula One, Nico Rosberg is now 3 out of 3 for the start of the season. He's a massive, I think, over 30 points ahead in the driver standings. But it's kind of entertaining what's happening behind him. I mean, Hamilton's having his issues with the car, mechanical failures, and he's crashed out a bit. But Ferraris aren't able to capitalize on this. And then you've got some mad Red Bull drivers. There's actually quite a lot happening, which is kind of good. So even if Rosberg is way ahead and the Mercedes just keep winning, at least there's something else to cheer about. And finally, the headlines, tennis. Monte Carlo Open, Rafael Nadal back in winning ways. That is him beating Gael Monfils 7-5, 5-7, 6-love. If you don't like tennis, well, I kind of see where you're coming from. But the French, the whole clay court stretch of the ATP Tour is actually really cool. And there's so many great destinations they go to. Monte Carlo was this last weekend. They go all around. And if Nadal's back on form, it's going to make for a very interesting French Open, because you know that's the one Open that Rafael Nadal has not won yet. That is a real big deal for him. So if he can get that going, well, sheepers. Nadal, Federer still got a bit going for him. It'd be great to see Monfils kick on in the majors. He hasn't really done it in the past. Jean-Wilfried Tsonga, yeah, you got lots of players. Andy Murray, of course, he's never to be thrown out of there. We're going to take a quick ad break. When we come back, we're going to get into our rugby feature. We've got our two guests and everything you need to know. If you do want to get involved, if you are listening in live, always get onto the WeChat. So it's Cliff Central official account there. And you can ask me anything you want. Otherwise, Twitter, at Follow the Bounce. You can get involved there as well.
It's back. Are you Jawsy tough? Cycle through tunnels, over floating bridges, and into colossal stormwater drains. You're a machine, and nothing's going to stop you. With two separate routes, a 22K for beginners or a 54K for the tougher riders. Go where no mountain biker has gone before. On the 29th of May, ride the Hollard Juma. Brought to you by AdReach and Joburg City Parks and Zoo. Challenge accepted. Juma.co.za.
Leonardo and Rita were finally taking their honeymoon, and they'd chosen the most luxurious honeymoon suite that money could buy.
On tonight's episode of Did You Know? Carbon monoxide, the silent killer.
The historic suite had every romantic necessity, including a generous 18th century indoor fireplace.
A lot of things can cause a CO spill, but the number one culprit is the indoor fireplace.
The enthusiastic lovebirds wasted no time, and within mere moments, the open flames were casting two bobbing shadows on the suite's ornate walls.
The initial symptoms of poisoning include breathlessness and disorientation.
Oh my, I feel breathless, gasped Rita. What planet are we on? Whispered Leonardo.
Inhaling the gas for a period of 20 minutes will start to weaken the muscles and can even lead to vivid hallucinations.
They lay limp in each other's arms before the fiery glow, while over in the corner, a Bengal tiger played the sitar. At Road Lodge, there's no chance of getting carbon monoxide poisoning from the fireplace because there is no fireplace. Road Lodge, the no-frills one-star hotel.
Welcome back. Listen to The Bounce Show. Monday morning, big rugby feature ahead. Now we've got Spu Mjekaliso coming up right now, but I just want to play a little intro for him because I saw him last week. I've always known about him on Twitter. This is how the world of sport works. But we were in the E Studios together. I was talking to someone, and then he was talking to someone else after that. It was all about the Springbok coach announcement, which was this thing. It took place last week.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is no stranger to South Africa and South Africans. And I say, without fear or favour yet today, that as we start this new era in South African rugby, I am personally excited. It is no secret, and even though everybody knows who he is, it still gives me goosebumps, makes my heart happy to be able to stand up here on behalf of rugby and behalf of the people of this great country. And I ask us all today to stand behind him and get behind him and get behind our rugby team. Alistair Coetzee has walked the walk, and I believe that he is the best man, the best person for the job. I'm really pleased, therefore, to say to the nation today that Alistair Coetzee is the new South African coach, and I thank you once again for allowing us the opportunity to present to you the coach of the Springboks, Alistair Coetzee.
Well, it's with a happy heart that I welcome Spu onto the show for the first time. Spu, thanks for joining us today.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
I thought the best intro would be Oregon Hoskins. Now, I couldn't contact him directly to intro you, so I just basically took what he said about Alistair Garcia. So, yeah, I saw you last week, and it literally was after the press conference. Like, just gut feeling. What's your take on Alistair Garcia as the next coach?
Well, my gut feeling is that in terms of timing, it's probably the most appropriate, especially considering the successes to Jake White. The timing has probably been off a bit. Like with Heineken Meyer, he probably should have gotten the job in 2007, end of 2007 to 2008. And he was a little off touch with rugby by the time he got it in 2011, 2012. The timing was terribly off. And I reckon that with Alistair Garcia, the timing is perfect. He's actually served his time in South African rugby, I reckon. And I think if he had gotten it too soon, if he had succeeded Jake White, he wouldn't have learned much of the lessons that he got at the Stormers. I mean, the Stormers gig was like pretty brutal on Alistair Garcia, to be honest. And the Cape media, they weren't easy on him, because in Cape Town, you have to win. Not only must you win, you have to win a certain way. I didn't like the way that he was winning games, obviously. And I know there's a lot of trepidation regarding how the Boks are going to play this year under Alistair Garcia. But I think now that he has a pool of the entire South African rugby public, or the entire rugby pool, you'll be able to pick skilled players to execute a more hands-on game plan and not win without the ball like they did in the 5 years he was there.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that point up, because in the aftermath of this announcement, everyone's going, oh yeah, but he was the only guy. He's the only guy who's going to put up with Sarius Kak, and on and on and on. I didn't hear too many positive things about the fact that he has actually walked the walk. And I mean, obviously, if I can talk to someone of substance like you, you can affirm this for me. But it just shows how fickle the rugby public is. And I think if we carry on as a public, of course, on this tone, I think we're going to miss something that could be quite special here. The point you made that was most salient around this is actually his time. The Heineken man never his time. Peter Villiers came in. Who really knows what's going on? But it is. Yeah. And I think after watching the Stormers versus the Lions, right, this last weekend, I think he's got a good player base. And I think he's got good knowledge of the player base, rather than just like, okay, that guy's good, that guy's good. I think this guy generally does know what he's going to work with. But do you think he's got enough time to really kind of make the start that he deserves to make for the island tests?
Look, a couple of things will be to his disadvantage. The way that the Boks are going to play, in terms of vision and long-term goals, those will be very compromised very, very early on, because he hasn't had time to go and liaise with the unions in terms of how the Boks should play, or how the players should be conditioned, who should be rested. So he doesn't really have a pool of players that he has under his absolute control. You contrast that with Ireland. Ireland have already gone into camp. I mean, Joe Schmidt had 40 players over the weekend that he took to camp. So they're ready. If they had to play tomorrow, I reckon they would beat the Boks. But luckily, there's still a bit of time. Not all is lost. And also, talent-wise, you can always bank on South Africans to have the talent, and we're playing at home, and we'll be fresher than the Irish, because they just finished their season. So I reckon it's going to be closer than it would have been ordinarily between a South Africa and Ireland series, especially one that's in South Africa. It's going to be very, very close. And Ireland has a very, very organized team as well, especially under Joe Schmidt. And although the World Cup was in tatters against the Argentina, that's very, very brilliant quarterfinal that we saw. But I reckon that, look, it's not ideal, but one thing that he has to his advantage is the fact that Alistair is not the kind of guy who's afraid to play players that are in form. I found with Heineken Meyer, his fear was trusting players that are in form from other unions that he hadn't actually worked with, that he didn't really know. So you found that he would pick a Victor Matfield, took Victor Matfield out of retirement purely on the basis that he wanted somebody new, intimately, to go and play for him. And I don't think Alistair is too attached to those kind of sentimental bonds. I reckon he will pick a guy in form. He'll throw caution to the wind. He might pick a Lionel Mapu and say, look, I've never worked with Lionel before at any level, but he is the form number 13, so I'll give him a shot, purely based on the fact that he's doing the job right now. He's that kind of coach. And he's not a coach that obsessed with size too much. He's spoken well about Alton Yankee. He's spoken well about Cheslin Kolbe. All the guys that have been, I reckon Yakub Kriel might be in with a proper shot at a box jersey this year. Fafi Klek, another one who has been absolutely brilliant. I've loved Fafi Klek this year. I think he's the closest thing we'll ever get to an Aaron Smith in South Africa. And also he's playing with the form flyhouse. So I expect to see those guys in Alistair's team. He's not the kind of guy that will be too attached to the Stormers. And I mean, look, the Stormers do a lot of good things, but what they don't have at the moment is dynamism. They don't have like match winners, guys who come in and just change the game completely. I know Siya Kolisi came off the bench against the Lions and did very, very well, but he probably doesn't want to play from the bench. So they're lacking a bit of that. So you won't find that Alistair will pick Stormers players purely on the basis that he's worked with them before. He'll look at everybody. And I actually think one or two of the Kings guys might have a shot. I think Edgar Marutuli has been very good. And I think JC Astle as well as maybe a possible number four, a fourth lock, if you know what I mean. We know the three big locks that are the best in the country. Lord Diakha picks himself. Eben Etzebeth picks himself. So does Peter Steps-Toyd if he stays fit. Yeah, and then we have an opening for a fourth guy. And I think JC Astle might be that guy because he's playing really good line out. Very, very well does JC Astle. So, and he's young, playing well at the Kings, a struggling team. So you look at those kind of guys. You'll look at, well, Yanis Kirsten, he's brilliant, played every game, a youngster there for the Bulls. You'll look at him, I think that kid is great. And also, knowing that there's a little bit of pressure that's off Alistair for this year, the delay has kind of given him a bit of a reprieve, so he can get his excuses in early. But we don't obviously want it to get there, but he's under less pressure ordinarily than a new Springbok coach would be.
Well, it's, there's about 3,000 points that I'm going to agree with you on. But the big one for me is that, like you say, if he doesn't know them, he'll still have the chance. It must give a real great message to players out there, knowing that, like, when Victor Matfield was picked, if you're an up-and-coming, you're a strong lock, or if you're just a guy maybe in the captaincy, basically, Hanekemeyer was saying, look, I have no faith. I have absolutely no faith in these guys.
Definitely,
taking nothing away from Victor, of course. But if you, like what you say now, is that even a couple of the guys in the Kings can at least be looked at on face value rather than him saying, look, you know, I want to go with what I'm proven with. And I think this is going to be such an amazing thing for SA Rugby because suddenly your players are a lot more motivated. They're a lot more sort of proactive in how they go about things. And performances will speak volumes for that. It's a really, really good place to be. But the big question I have to ask you is now, is he going to go along the strategy of he picks the best players and finds a captain within them? Or is it very much like identifying a captain and then kind of looking at someone who can work with him? Because we know when it comes to international levels, man management almost supersedes skill and playing ability. So what do you reckon his tact will be with that one?
Jesus, it's a tough one. I've grappled with it myself. I had to put a story together for my newspaper over the weekend. And I grappled with it. I asked a few guys that have been captains either at Springbok level or been captains under Alistair Kutsi. I spoke to a guy called Chad Alcock, who was the scrum half and captain at Eastern Province, and he also played for the Sharks back when Alistair was the coach then. And he says, look, the one thing his captain, which is a non-negotiable, that his captain must pick himself in the starting 15. It transcends any other bond that they might have prior. You felt with Hanekemeyer, he always spoke of trust between the captain and himself first, above the ability of the captain to stay within the team, to stay injury-free, like Jean de Villiers played with injury in the latter stages of his captaincy. Mr. Matfield is also hopping over the line. I reckon for Reed Prayer, you also can make so many captains and then weren't necessarily at their feet. So I think it might throw a curveball. Yeah, it might not be someone who expected. I think Warren Whiteley in with a great shot. He's certainly one of the players that could command a good starting place for 4 years. I mean, Whiteley is only 27 years old.
Yeah.
And for the kind of rugby we want to play, Whiteley certainly fits the bill. I think a guy like Ruud Diakha could be one of those sort of for the future kind of captains if we're looking in that mold. I mean, Alistair was there when John Smith was picked as captain when he was young, as a 23-year-old, when Jake White said, "This is my captain. Going forward, nothing changes. We'll start and play every game." And no one can say Ruud Diakha is not the kind of player that will start and play every game. So I think people are saying Dwayne Vermeulen, but I reckon he will look beyond that. He will look for a guy that will be there in Japan in 2019. So I'm leaning towards a Ruud Diakha. I'm leaning towards a Warren Wiley. I think Swan Leong might have been in with a chance, were it not for the multitude of centers that we've got in the country. I mean, we're blessed with quality centers. I mean, if you have to pick a 13 between Fonso Fente at the Cheetahs, Lionel Mapu, who I've mentioned, at the Lions, as well as Swan Leong himself at 13, and Jesse Creel, there's also, I mean, a whole lot of guys like Jan Stefontein can also play 13. So,
yeah,
so I don't think Leong is like the best of the best that's out there in terms of number 13. So he might struggle to keep his place.
Wow, what a job, hey? I mean, you think we all wake up on our Monday with things to do. But all these different points, like, it's just endless, really. Like, you want to get a captain who's got some international experience as well, which wouldn't stand in John Young's case. But you also want someone who's going to be indispensable. Wow, it really is. It's like the guy has so many different decisions, but every time that we discuss these things, I feel that he's still in a good place, though. It's like the only thing I'm looking at right now, you know, because I'm not trying to find negative, I'm just trying to make some balance, is that our flower situation is not looking so good, right? Elton Jungi, I hope he makes it, because I think the guy's been thereabouts. I don't think he's been managed very well. He had a disastrous season at the Stormers. He got into the box setup and he was out of it. I reckon he's our first choice on form, and I think he should be. But behind that, it's looking kind of scary, huh? I mean, what happens if Elton was, heaven forbid, touch wood, fall down tomorrow? Who have we actually really got going ahead for the student series alone?
Yeah, those are the things that are sort of out of your hand, coach. I mean, we currently don't have any fly-offs. We don't have any knocking at the door. I mean, it's really, it will have to be a curveball. I mean, Jean looks okay, but two Stormers games at best, no international experience to speak of at all. And everyone else is injured. Pat Lambie might make it back in time, but at maximum, might get, what, 3 matches before the start of an international season.
Yeah.
Andre Pollard, obviously, as we know, is out. So, really, I don't think Elton's also being managed well. I mean, I had a close-up look at his strapping that he plays with on his wrist, which they say at the union is precautionary, but it's pretty heavy strapping.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Measure, I'll tell you that. It's almost like a cost if you actually had a look at that strapping on Elton Jansen's left wrist. It looks terrible. So I don't know. I don't know how far that injury's gone. I'd love to see the x-rays, but unfortunately, I'm not in a position to demand those from the union. But I reckon Elton might struggle a bit. I think it's a bit selfish of the Lions, to be honest, to play him through this time, because what they're saying is they're putting their campaign ahead of everything else, even though they do have a very capable fly-off, Manu Boso and Yakru van der Vaart on the bench. So, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. And I mean, I saw Johan Kosse playing for Racing Metro at number 13 as well when they beat Toulon. Dan Carter started to fly off, and I had a French fullback playing at 15. And I mean, if you're going to take a guy that's playing 13 and that's also played 15 up in front and making you a fly off, a bit of a kick in the teeth to the guys that are local. There's always Mornay Steyn. Depending on how things
and unfortunately, get you're right. There is always Mornay Steyn.
Yeah, and there's always Mornay Steyn to sort of fall back on in the absence of anybody else. So I'm hoping that there's a fly off in the woods somewhere that might be born in time.
Yeah,
for the international season.
All right, so we have unfortunately run out of time and we need to get into a Super Rugby feature. But yeah, I guess the bottom line is the Lions need to manage Elton Jungi better. And he just needs the support he deserves, huh? I think all the credentials are there. All the resources are in place. if he can just get freedom, I got a good feeling about this guy. Sure, he wasn't the most dynamic coach in the world in Stormers rugby. Being a Stormers fan, obviously, now I've been through all the hard times with them. So my glass is sometimes half empty, but I've got a good feeling about this guy. And it's been great chatting to you because, I mean, just some of those points that I think people just fail to actually recognize. This guy is going to make this team something a bit more special, and it's definitely his time to do so.
No, it's actually good, and you know what's the other good thing is that of all the other coaches, he won't be hassled about all the other things. He's a good, great man manager, and I think because he's given so many guys a fair chance, he won't be caught up in what Henneke Meyer was caught up in, when he gave Rudy Page so little game time and he gave Lionel so little game time, and I don't think he'll be caught up in the numbers. I mean, by the end of the term, Meyer was struggling to fill the quota of black players, and it was just sad to see good players miss out on a chance because he couldn't manage it from the start of his tenure. He couldn't put in the players that merited selection soon enough in those positions. So he ended up having to fill numbers purely based on what the suits wanted at the end of the day, which is very unfortunate. Yeah. And I don't think Alistair Kutsia will be caught in that at all. He's given everybody a fair chance, and then it'll be good to see.
Cool. Spoo, thanks so much. If you want to find Spoo on Twitter, it's SBU_fundraiser. It's very interesting, Spoo, but you got to be unique in life, huh? And where else can people find your writing? I mean, I try to cram you to 10 minutes here, and I failed miserably. Where can people find your writings on a week-to-week basis?
I write for Times Media Group, so any of our newspapers, like The Times or Sowetan, Business Day or The Sunday Times mostly. So any of our group papers, you can check me out or online on Times Live. So basically, that's it.
All right. Spoo, thanks so much for your time. Busy guy. We're going into a Super Rugby feature next, just to kind of intro you to that. The Sunwolves play against the Cheetahs, and it didn't go particularly well. Sergio Peterson, though, he had a great game.
Ooh. Peterson over the top, the kick for Peterson, hoping for the bounce. He gets the bounce, yes he does. Room on the outside, Sergio Peterson, that's going to be a hat trick. Manages to win it back.
Manders.
And Lee sells the dummy, Sergio Peterson on the outside. Yeah. Try number four. Donnie Mini. Rule. Peterson. The step. The ball's off to Schooner. Schooner for the hat-trick. Schooner. Ball Schooner. 92.17,
huh? An absolute hammering. Sean, did you watch the match?
The Sunwolves and the Cheetahs.
Yeah,
I know, I did. It was actually too difficult to watch. I actually switched it off after it was like 33-3 after 20 minutes.
Wow, and when the two teams played prior to this, just the 1-point gap, huh?
Oh. Yeah, exactly, and it's kind of hard to believe, but yeah, I'm not a big Sunwolves fan. I think they're actually pathetic,
But like, what is it though? I mean, is it a case of depth? Because the first thing people, when they saw the Super 18, I mean, there's so many teams that have actually dropped the number now. But is this game here just confirming the fact that maybe, Sanzard won't obviously listen to this or care about this, but maybe there are just too many teams? Because if this is going to happen now, I reckon there'll be more of this kind of happening in the future, right?
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with you. In my opinion, the Super Rugby should be premium in first division. Obviously, there's substantial problems with that, and that nobody's going to watch the first division. Although, you know, the thing is like they want to bring rugby to Japan and rugby to Singapore and increase the presence of the game there. But then the stadiums are relatively empty, which is also kind of like counterproductive in my opinion. So their logic kind of falls flat a bit.
Look, it all looks great when a couple of guys in suits get together at a table and they start showing flowcharts and all that kind of crap. But when it comes down to rugby, like, you can't fool the wool over many eyes here, and it's a bit of a shame. So the next team is going to be expanded to, who knows? The Sunwolves, the first time away to South Africa, they got hammered by the Stormers, and in retrospect, maybe that was actually quite a good game by them.
Sure, maybe they did quite well.
So, Joan, you are one half of the left backs, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and I originally started the Bounce Show purely so I can just talk to guys like you and myself around there. So we're not talking to players, because I think players are kind of boring a lot of the time. You know, it's about people who are actually watching this stuff, getting insights. And, I mean, your site's definitely a site that I picked up on from late last year, and, of course, on Twitter as well. So rugby is kind of more your sport. So you've been watching Super Rugby quite a lot. Your take on the log right now, do you think the allocation of teams going into the qualifications, the knockout stages, is fair? That the fact that the African pool gets, what, 3, and then the Australasian one gets, what, 5?
That is quite an odd one. And you know, I think the way they divide up the logs and the way they kind of structure the competition has become so convoluted. And I think the reason it's become convoluted is because it's just not natural. You know, it's not like a natural thing for 18 teams to be in one competition. And it's very clear to see that there's never been like an expansion plan. It's always been, let's just add more teams. Let's add more teams and then we'll figure out as we get there. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of how the whole system works. I mean, also the fact that the Stormers aren't playing any New Zealand sides. The Stormers and the Bulls, that is. I think that's really, really kind of unfair in a way. I think it's also unfair to the Stormers in that they can't really prove, you know, their skills. And it's also unfair for the guys like the Sharks who are playing the Kiwi sides, because, I mean, let's be honest, they're significantly stronger than Australian sides.
Well, just to give you an understanding, the Australian group right now, first place Chiefs, second place Brumbies, third place Crusaders, fourth place Hurricanes, fifth place Highlanders. The Stormers will play one of those 5 teams. The Sharks, on the other hand, not so nice. But the thing is, it's like, you know, you look at this and go, well, unfortunately, much like government, this is what we stuck with. So it's like you try to make the best of it. But just amongst this, like the teams that you've seen so far, who do you reckon are the real sort of dangers here? I know we can just look at the log, look at the Chiefs and go, well, they're the team to beat. But just going forward, longevity, depth of squad, all that kind of stuff, who for you are the major contenders for these qualification spots?
I think the Crusaders were formidable against the Jaguars, but that's the thing about the Crusaders. You know, they lose a Dan Carter, they lose a Richie McCaw, and they are just machines. It's just that they know how to win rugby matches, and they always peak. Yeah, they're slow starters, but they always just seem to peak at the right time. So for me, long-term, they're always going to be a threat. I think locally, the Lions are looking quite good. I think their game plan is good. I think Johanna Ackermann is the best tactician in the country when it comes to strategy. I think that he's got a really good game plan at the moment. And I think that the Lions will be competitive as long as he's kind of in charge there. The Highlanders have kind of been a little iffy, so I don't really think that they're going to go places. I think, but to your point, the Chiefs, you know, with guys like Damon McKenzie, they've got a lot of youth. They're just a killer side. And I think, you know, Chiefs and Crusaders, there would be the two main guys for the foreseeable future, in my opinion.
Totally. And a team like the Hurricanes, is anything worth drawing into that start they had, which was pretty slow considering how good they were last year? I know they're coming now, but I mean, 2 losses and then 5 wins.
Yeah, for sure. I love the Canes. They're probably my favorite Kiwi side, my favorite kind of like non-South African side. And I think that it's very disappointing. I think they obviously lost Conrad Smith, which is a big loss. I mean, he was a captain, kind of like Captain Courageous, you know, lead from the front, all that kind of thing. And I think that they're missing him. But I mean, you know, everything else is still kind of the same. I don't really know what's going on there, to be honest. I think it feels a bit like it's a mental problem, like they maybe just don't believe in themselves. And I think it's difficult to do that when you start losing games. But that's why the really good sides are the ones with the really strong leaders and the ones that are able to pick themselves up from those kinds of positions, like the Crusaders, for example. They just know how to win matches, like I said.
Okay. And then with regards to Brumbies, they started off so strong, but then they had a bit of a wobble. They are sort of consolidating it now. Is it fair to say that maybe they're not the title contenders? They could be there, but they just don't have the next level as far as the Kiwi side is concerned?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that they had a good start. I think they were kind of mediocre against the Waratahs. Obviously, against the Stormers, there was a red card, which I think drastically affected how they felt about that game. But yeah, in my opinion, I don't think that they're title contenders. I think that obviously the way the tables are set up, I think that they, you know, will be represented in the playoffs, but I don't think that they're true title contenders.
Just last look in the teams. What the hell's happened to the Waratahs? I mean, is that just a leadership vacuum? Is it because Cech is gone and everything else went with it?
Yeah, I think losing Cech is massive. I think he's a really, really astute coach. I think that the Wallabies are much better for securing his services. I also think that they seem to be ravaged by injuries because, I mean, they played like Bilal and they played Kirby Beale in the centres on Saturday, which is quite strange since neither of them are centres, although Beale's played there a lot.
Yeah.
He's not naturally a centre. So I think that they're probably struggling with injuries a bit. And yeah, man, it's such a long competition. I always say that the mindset is so important here. You know, you've got to be in the right frame of mind. When you lose a match, you've got to pick yourself up again. And I think too many teams don't do that. With the competition being so long, you know, mental conditioning is just as important as physical conditioning. So, yeah, the guys really need to work on that, the guys that aren't doing well, in my opinion.
Right. Well, Sean, I definitely get you back when this thing becomes more closer to the reckoning time. We're running out of time now. This hour just goes way too quickly. But like players, yeah. You know, you mentioned that Damien McKenzie guy from the Chiefs. Any other major players that have sort of come out this season that you weren't really expecting?
For sure. Francois Fenter for me from the Cheetahs has been fantastic.
He's
a really, really good player. And I really, really hope that he gets a look in for the Springboks. I think at outside center, we're a little thin. I'm not the biggest Jesse Creel fan at the moment, and I know that that's kind of a contentious thing because a lot of people are.
Well, but in my opinion, interesting you say, because our previous guest was saying how Jean de Jong's captaincy or even Bok selection is in doubt because we've got so much on the outside center.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, on the selection, you know, on the captaincy thing, you have to be the first name on that team sheet. Yeah. So, I mean, in my opinion, Francois Fenter is a better outside center than Jean de Jong. Unfortunately,
yeah,
he's really, really impressed me. In terms of who else has impressed me, I think the Dupria twins from the Sharks have been good, but they started well, but their hands are a little iffy. They need to work on that.
Yeah, I think it's like decades of creatine. Your hands will come later.
Exactly. I think for me, Alton Jantjies has been good, but I have to say I'm not the biggest Alton Jantjies fan. I actually looked into some of the stats to see what I could find to back up my argument, and I see that he's rated number one in the competition for most tackles missed. I think that he's not a great defender, and I know, again, that's a contentious thing, but in my opinion, if you had to put him in the green and gold, he would only be able to play the way he does if the Bolts play exactly where the Lions do. And I don't foresee that happening. So, in my opinion, he's certainly next in line to wear the Bolt number 10 jersey, but in my opinion, long-term, he's not a great solution, but he has had a good competition.
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. Sabu, earlier guest, was saying he's got a cast-like bandaging strapping on his arms. So maybe he's missing tackles because his arm's so screwed. There's so different levels to all this kind of stuff. And again, going back to what Alistair Casillas got on his plate to work with, so many different variables, huh? Well, John, we have unfortunately run out of time. I've got to play a rant from Stan Collymore about Aston Villa right now, which I just have to get in before the show is done. But so we can find you at the left back. Sorry, leftbacks.co.za?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And leftbacks at leftbacks on Twitter.
Okay, great. All right, man. I look forward to chatting to you again. Thanks for your time today. We got Stan Collymore. Now, you remember Stan Collymore, right? He was Aston Villa. He played a few other teams. He, I think, beat up a few chicks. Look, the guy hasn't got the best reputation. But just listen to what he's got to say about Julian Westcott. Okay, now this guy used to play for Man City. He then played for Aston. Now he's the star player of Aston Villa. Aston Villa have been relegated, and after being dubbed 6-0 by Liverpool, he tweeted a picture of a AMG Mercedes. He then said that he pocket tweeted it, but basically Stan Collymore, as you can pick up from this thing here, he's just getting at these guys. They've just given up, and it's just unacceptable, really. And I think he mirrors the exact thoughts of all Aston Villa fans out there right now.
And I would love Jolien or any other Villa player to call me up in all seriousness. Jamie Carragher's done it to Adrian Durham before. Did it the other day. Jason Cundy. Jace was saying about Liverpool and not being a very good side or something like that. And Jamie Carragher had the balls to ring up Jason Cundy and take him to task. I'd like any Villa player, particularly Jolien Lescott, to come on and first explain about the non-tweeting car from you. I mean, I've tried it with Siri, and it's virtually impossible. Particularly a WhatsApp image. You have to open WhatsApp, and then Twitter, and then post the picture onto Twitter. So I think that's codswallop, Jolien. But today, this is a senior international footballer in the modern era. Now confirmed. Maybe it's a weight off the shoulders. Why is it a weight off the shoulders, Jolien? It should hang on your shoulders in Dubai, in mobs, with the gold bottle with the ace of spades on it in the summer when you and Gabby and Leandro are all going to be laughing when your agents go off and tout you to other football clubs. That's where the weight of the world should be on your shoulders. So, and also the Villa staff, there's the real weight on their shoulders. People that are getting made redundant, that have been there for 20 years, don't know where the next paycheck might come from. That's what the performances have done, of tweeting cars and coming out with, now confirmed, maybe it's a weight off the shoulders and we can give these fans what they deserve, some performances. Now, I was crap at Villa. I was crap, considering where I'd come from at Liverpool and particularly before that at Nottingham Forest. I was crap. But I was crap having played in every game of a club winning record amount of games. I think it was 11 or 12 games. I was crap and scoring in a quarter-final of a European club competition and firmly in the top half of the table. And I was crap for Aston Villa. So what does that make you, Joleon and Leandro, and many of the other players that are wearing yellow today? Was the most apt colour that Aston Villa, those players, could have worn. The colour yellow. Go and check out what it actually means. You have a big yellow stripe through every single one of you. You've all talked the talk all year about staying up, wanting to stay up, wanting to club the, keep the club up, and none of you have done it. I saw Bakuna in Birmingham Airport at 6 o'clock in the morning, having been beaten at Southampton Round on his hoverboard. You're a disgrace. Joleon Lescott, you've won and hid behind players like Silva and Aguero, but when it mattered today with your hometown club that you profess to support, you couldn't be as crap as me and keep us in the top half of the table or play in Europe. You've helped them go down. So if you're listening, Joleon, if you're listening, Micah, if you're listening, Brad, if you're listening, Leandro, give us a call. And instead of tweeting and putting on Instagram that Collymore's this and Collymore's that, come and tell us about your season.
I will definitely keep you updated on that beef, because that sounds pretty good. Stan Collymore was beating around the block and back, and he just, you couldn't fault anything he was saying there. These guys just living the superstar lives, and it doesn't make a difference to them if they go down, but there's people who are now losing jobs. Aston Villa going down to that championship, whatever they call that first division, is a massive thing. They're going to lay off staff. People are going to be unemployed. It really is terrible. And for the fans, they're going to be watching teams like Leeds or Middlesbrough. They're not going to be watching teams like Liverpool or Arsenal or Man City anymore. So much to get into with this football here. Thanks so much for joining me today. If you missed anything during the show, if you are listening live, then the podcast is there for you on thebounce.co.za and, of course, thecliffcentral.com. And for more sport throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at followthebounce and find out about my guests and a whole bunch of other articles I'm about to write about all kinds of things. Thebounce.co.za. Catch you back next week. Thanks for joining me.
This is CliffCentral.com.